Hey, it's Dan Melnick. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Zing, and I'm proud to be a sponsor of this podcast. So please check us out today as we can help fuel your business growth. MyZing.io. Thank you.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's early here, so, you know, just had my coffee and, you know, feeling peppy. Excited to talk. Yeah.
Firstly, thank you very much, Arika, for giving me opportunity to interview you for my YouTube channel and podcast and for my channels.
Yeah, absolutely. I was excited you asked me.
So I've gone through your profile. I can see you're doing a lot of work. So I thought to tell about your work to my audience. So can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Erica Dietrich. I'm a developer advocate at Cisco Systems, and I'm primarily focused on the security side of the house and on Cisco security portfolio. So what I do ranges from a lot of different work. It's really about anything our community needs, whether it's teaching them about network programmability, how to use Terraform, creating resources for developers, educational guides, speaking at conferences. I think that the nice thing about what I do at Cisco is that it is so wide-ranging. It would be hard to sum up, I think, in a sentence, but here to serve the community.
So you're from?
I'm sorry?
You're from?
Oh, I'm from Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, USA.
So you are into Cisco from last 6 years?
Yeah, I took a break in between. I spent some time in startup land, but yeah, I started in 2019 as a firepower tech engineer.
So can you tell a little bit about your background, where you came from, and what made you to come into technology?
Yeah, that's a hard story to sum up too, but essentially, I graduated with my undergraduate degree in biology and left and quickly realized that there was nothing I wanted to do with that degree. And I kind of hopped around from job to job for a while, and I ended up being a food service manager and working as a barista at Starbucks. And I remember very clearly having this moment one day before a shift, just being really angry because I couldn't afford to go to the doctor for something I needed. And you know what? I was like so lost on what to do next. But actually, my dad is a software engineer. And, you know, you think that that connection would be more obvious, right? Maybe that I would have chosen that path starting out. But that's just really never how it was. I didn't see myself as a technological person or somebody who would be interested in those things. And I was like, you know, my dad loves his career. He's smart and he gets challenged every day and he's happy. So I'm just going to go for it and see if I like it. I mean, it can't be worse than it is now. And luckily I ended up loving it. So I ended up getting into a master's program for software engineering. And, that was rough. I did that at the same time as I became a co-op at Cisco, for that firepower tech team. So I was learning network engineering and software engineering at the same time. That was brutal. But I guess once I got over that hump of, you know, not knowing anything and feeling, you know, like I didn't want to cry every day trying to learn it, you know, I realized that it was the perfect place for someone like me who loves continuously learning and being on the cutting edge of things and making things.
So how do you look at yourself? You studying as a, studying software engineering and also parallelly studying network engineering. Today, you are training someone who are not familiar with it.
like, what advice would I give them? Or,
I mean, how do you look at yourself in two different things that you have?
Yeah, it has definitely complicated my career path. I'm not going to lie. I mean, luckily at Cisco, right, I get to leverage both sides of that. But that has been a point of confusion, I think, in every role I've had since I entered tech because, you know, when you're entering the tech industry, I think a lot of times you're just trying to get a foot in the door and get a learning experience. And I ended up doing this co-op at Cisco because I had a friend from high school who was at my college recruiting for Cisco. And I had no idea what this co-op entailed. And he's like, oh, you're smart and you'll love Cisco. Like, just come, you know, get into this. And I ended up getting it. But, you know, once I got the foot in the door, I was like, okay, what now? You know, what does this co-op prepare me for? So personally, when I talk to people, I introduce myself as a developer because that's my training. That's what I love doing. I love making stuff. But I choose to see it as a positive that I understand a larger tech landscape versus just, oh, I make cool apps, right? I understand the entire stack. So I try to view it as a positive instead of as a confusing generalist.
So have you done any certifications?
Yes. So I did the CCNA during my co-op. I think it's been 2 years ago now that I earned the DevNet Associate. So that's Cisco's like network programmability certificate. And then a little bit random, but during my startup time, I got the GitLab TeamOps certification, and that's just basically how do you work well in a remote environment. It's kind of understated qualification.
So working with systems and interacting and communicating with humans. So which one do you like? Because you are a trainer and also you work with systems.
I actually personally like both equally, and that's why I love being a developer advocate. I think that there's a big misconception that there's a very much left brain, right brain division in professions in tech, right? But the reality is, you know, even the people who are working with systems should at least a little bit be able to talk to people and care about people and, you know, vice versa, right? People who are selling the products, leading them somehow should know something about tech. And I think there's the most opportunity for impact and business value when you can communicate between both. And I love drawing those connections. I would get bored if I, you know, was just sitting and coding all day and I had no connection to anything else, but I would also be bored just talking to people all day. You know, that's, I don't know. So I like both.
Great. So you'll be interacting with different business owners or leaders or who are working for different businesses as a developer advocate. You already know the technological things, how things work. So how do you match the technology tools and tools and services that you have with the business requirements of different businesses that you work for?
That's a great question. And I think that I think it depends a little bit on what role you're in. Oh, is my connection still okay? Okay. So again, I've worked in engineering, I've worked in sales engineering, and now as a developer advocate, right? So, you know, as an engineer, I think that that's, part of that is solved by agile, right? So the hope is that you or whoever's representing you can effectively communicate with the customer, gather the requirements, and you can build to that, and they see iterations of that early on to know, hey, yeah, that's what I want. You know, as a sales engineer, it's more so you don't have control over what your company offers, right? So it's more so a conversation understanding people. You know, what is it you need and how can I specifically help you with that need? Not like, oh, we have the latest, greatest thingamabob that does 50 million things. No one cares. You know, they want to know how their life can be easier. And as a developer advocate, I mean, I think that it's sort of similar to sales engineering, except, you know, I'm not making any commission off of what I do. And I can be honest about, you know, if I think something sucks about our products. But I think listening is the number one skill. I don't think it's prioritized, but all I'm doing every day when I wake up is I'm getting on, I'm talking to people, I'm hearing what do they do in their day-to-day work. What do they find difficult? What are they passionate about? And I'm meticulously taking notes on this stuff. I'm trying to draw connections between, oh, does Cisco actually offer that and they just don't know about it? Or, oh, do I need to get Cisco on that? Is it something I need to develop? So yeah, it depends on the role, I think.
And how you as this role developer advocate, how this role have impacted you as human being? Is there any change in
Oh
you?
yeah. Well, it's a dream job. So I'll say that, you know, it's impacted me by making me happy for one. But I think the Well, I mean, so, okay. The biggest way it's impacted me is that I get paid to learn, right? I now am in a role where I'm expected to know things and to teach them. And when you're teaching somebody, you have to know your stuff, right? So that's a dream come true. I feel like every engineer would love more time to learn. And a lot of them have a passion for sharing their knowledge too. So that's definitely number one. And I guess also the secondary thing is just being attached to the Cisco name. So I've always been a communicator and an educator in my mind, but sometimes, people don't really care what you have to say unless you have a brand name behind you or whatever. So Cisco adds a lot of credibility to my profession, and that's awesome too.
So you have done the certification, you have understood how networks work and the programs work, and now you are teaching to someone who doesn't know about it. So how is you as educator, like how do you define yourself?
Like, how would I introduce somebody to network engineering?
Correct. Yeah.
Well, I definitely think that it depends on their prior background, right? It's kind of that similar thread of thought of meeting somebody where they're at. But you might have seen recently on LinkedIn, I started this kind of laid back funny series explaining networking engineering concepts, and one of them is like, what is the internet? And so if this was a person that had no technical background whatsoever, I would explain everything in terms of concepts rather than technical terms, right? Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, first we take, it finds this MAC address and blah, 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 right? No, nobody learns that way, right? People learn top down. And so I'd say conceptually, right? In this video, right? People are used to doing things like navigating to YouTube, right? And so first it's getting people to think about what are all the major steps that it takes in order for your browser to load a web page, right? And so we don't care if you know all the protocols. If you know any real terminology, it's instilling that way of thinking, right? And then personally, that's when I would start to layer in the details, right? Have people understand ARP, DNS, HTTPS, right? And you layer it in once they have that big picture because they have something to connect it to in their mind. So that's a very general answer to what you're saying. I think that if somebody has a network engineering background or tech background, it's a lot different. But in general, I think that things are taught way too complexly. People want to have fun and to truly understand something, not just be able to recite definitions from a textbook.
And what kind of projects that you have done in Cisco?
Well, as a developer advocate, it's only been a few months, so I haven't done a ton of projects with them yet. Right now I'm working on a diagram as code video series. So I would say all engineers have to create diagrams to communicate with people. And as I'm sure you know, there's a big as code movement right now, right? And that's for a lot of reasons. But diagram as code is kind of the next iteration of that trend. And so I'm teaching people how to do that, whether they know how to code or not. I also recently did a scripting project where I helped people identify uncommon domains in their network. So I did this using Cisco Umbrella. So you can get a free trial or a sandbox account if you don't have the product, but basically Umbrella can show you what your DNS activity was for the past however long. I chose a week. And then we can compare that to Cisco's global Umbrella network. It's something crazy like 800 billion requests a day to us to compare the two, right? And see, oh, which of the DNS requests in my network is not in one of these, top 1 million Umbrella domains. Because if it's not in that top 1 million with 800 billion request sample size, then, maybe we should check this out. That's weird. Somebody's visiting it. Before that, I did a lot for Cisco. I don't know how far back you want to go, but those are the two things recently I've been working on.
And you are a software engineer as well.
Yes.
So what project you did as a software engineer?
So this is what I'm doing now, I personally feel like is more so just scripting and doing basic coding versus true software engineering. And I don't mean to say that in like an offensive way, but I'm not doing a lot of like application development right now. I'm doing that stuff in my free time, like for fun and to keep up with things. I mean, like for instance, I've been learning GraphQL and just for fun, making a GraphQL API of the Napoleon Dynamite movie. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but
Yeah.
it's kind of a hit or miss, but so yeah, I think that what is really fun and challenging about being a developer advocate at Cisco is that most developer advocacy programs are just serving straight up application developers. Like, there's no question about who they're serving. They are people with the title software engineer. I mean, Cisco, because we have this large network engineering base and we have this, widely expanding portfolio, our developer program is servicing people who, might never need to know many of the things that I went to school for, right? I mean, they just need to know how to automate something. So right now I'm just trying to serve the community and I feel like that's what they need is to learn just those basic scripting skills to automate their day to day. But I would really love if we had a stronger outreach to application developers because that's where I could really add some great value.
So, you are into security. So how much you are able to understand the security for any applications in the internet?
So again, I'm going to give you a lot of long-winded but honest answers. So security, I think there's a big difference between being a security professional and being in the security space. So since I've been at Cisco, I've been in the security space, right? I have a very, very keen understanding of what cybersecurity professionals need, what they struggle with, what different products look like and how they can help people. And I think there's something to be said for that, but I think there's a big difference between me and somebody who can write their own malware or who has done penetration testing or things of that nature. Those are all things I can talk around, but I've never done. So to answer your question, I know the space. But I don't consider that same thing as being a cybersecurity professional.
And you work with more than 100 startups.
And I work with what?
More than 100 startups.
100
You know,
stack-ups?
startups.
Oh.
Startups, the new companies.
Oh, yep.
Right. So how is that? How is that experience?
Just working with like a whole variety of
Yeah.
customers and companies.
Correct. Yeah. Different customers.
I mean, it's fun. I mean, that I think has been one of the biggest reasons I've learned a lot because, I mean, Cisco's big and Cisco's kind of a bubble, So if I weren't to talk to developers outside the company or customers when I was a sales engineer briefly, I wouldn't really learn how people are really using our technology or what problems people really face, right? Like as a developer advocate, I mean, I can make fun, fancy scripts all day long or just brag about using this new technology, but unless it actually matters or was actually needed, then who really cares? So I think that's been really exciting. I think initially, if you're not used to that kind of thing, it's intimidating because I mean, kind of like I mentioned, right? I work with people in who are cybersecurity professionals as someone who is trained as a software engineer and has worked as a network engineer, right? I'm not someone who considers themselves an expert at security. But I think there's a level of confidence you gain once you talk to a few, C-suite level individuals or engineers, and you're like, okay, I can add value and help people regardless of whether or not I'm hands-on with the same technology they are.
So you as a generalist, how you define the human and the technology connection?
How would I define the connection? That's a really good question. So, I mean, I personally, I think that the tech industry, and again, even being an engineer, is just as much people as it is technology. I don't feel like I really have to go over the tech aspect of it, right? All of us are technical folks and we know hard skills are important, all this stuff, blah, 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 right? But, I've been in a lot of roles and in multiple companies now, and, the significance of the people aspect and what that looks like when you don't realize that 50% of your job is people, whether you like it or not, is significant. And the best way I can describe that is giving an example, right? I mean, kind of like you mentioned as an engineer, like how do you meet business requirements, right? I mean, other than the actual coding itself, from beginning to end, you are dealing with people, whether that's the customer or your colleagues or your project manager or your own self, having that emotional awareness. And so, right, you're listening to your customer or the person who wants your product, right? And when you listen to them, you have to translate, business needs and people needs into technical requirements. That is not at all easy. And you have to do that in a way that is investigative and in some ways is a little bit mind reading in my opinion, because people often don't know what they want. You know, you go to build software and you know you're working with a team and you have to understand people's strengths and weaknesses. You have to delegate accordingly. Software fails all the time because of poor processes and poor management, you know? You get into actually coding, right? And there's obvious things like code reviews, but I think there's less obvious things too, like I don't know, getting people to, you know, use best practices, like mental blockers. I think that's what I'm trying to say, mental blockers. So mental blockers to using best coding practices, mental blockers to solving problems. Mental blockers to communicating when they can't figure something out and asking for help. I feel like I'm talking a lot on this, but at the end, right? You've built something. How many people build something revolutionary and then can't communicate that to the world? I see that constantly too. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I feel like they're like DNA strands, completely intertwined.
How you are able to succeed as a communicator talking with non-technical customers?
How do I succeed doing that?
Yeah.
So for better or for worse, I think this dings me as a technical person, but I have always been someone who likes to communicate things in very simple terms. Which is great for communicating with non-technical people. I think that it makes me look like I'm not technical to other technical people. So my natural inclination to always use things simply, don't use acronyms, don't use buzzwords, don't assume someone knows something. That's a big part of it. But also, again, coming down to that listening, most non-technical people do not care about, you know, 80% of what's going on with a project or the technical aspects. They just need to know the one thing they need to know or care about. So, you keep it simple in terms of how you communicate it and also the amount you're communicating. You know, you don't need to get passionate about what you're doing and then they don't care. That's the short answer.
And you're the founder of Stealth.
Yes, yeah, so stealth is a term that people will sometimes take in startup world to basically say that they're developing underground, as in they're not talking about what they're building to people. So that's not the actual company name, but we're in stealth mode right now.
Yeah, so you also do conferences and you also go for public talk.
You said I go to conferences and do what?
Yeah, for exploring technology or explaining
Yes.
or for trainings. So how is that? How is that experiences and what works that you have done as a speaker?
Well, I will partially let you know when it happens. I'm accepted to multiple conferences right now, but only being in this role a few months, I haven't actually presented on technology. I've done many presentations before this, and you know, part of why I'm so excited and relieved to finally be in this role is because even when I left Cisco, right, I was constantly staying in touch with Cisco people, and I would coach people on their presentations, you know, for these major conferences, because it was something I loved and was good at. And I was like, well, damn, like, when am I going to get to present something? So, yeah, I can't speak to that yet, but, I can sum up generally that no matter what the presentation is, I make it a story. So even if it's a technical presentation, you know, you're telling the story of, you know, why does this even matter? Why do you care? And, oh, what is the thing? Breaking down step by step how you do it, and making it interactive.
Can I say you have understood everything about Cisco and how it works, the service? Because you're a trainer, you teach people how it works.
Everything about Cisco, you said?
Yeah.
No, not even close. Oh my gosh. So yeah, Cisco is so large, right? The portfolio is so large. There's just absolutely no way. I mean, I would be hard pressed to find anyone at Cisco who knows everything Cisco does. But I guess that's part of, the ability to learn, right? You know, even at Cisco, you know, typically the way it goes is I have a strong foundation in multiple areas, and, you know, one quarter we might prioritize, a certain tech concept or a certain product, and it is my mission to learn it and master it. And that's kind of how that goes.
What is your skill set as a developer advocate and also the trainer?
So my major skill set is, from a development perspective, .NET Core and C#. That is my bread and butter development stack. And it's actually a goal of mine to bring more of that into our training at Cisco, because so many people do use C#, and again, it's meeting people where they're at. What do they need? I'm using Python a lot these days. So all the scripting work I'm doing, the network programmability, that's in Python. Beyond that, I've dabbled in numerous languages just for product's sake, right? You know, I'm dabbling in Go right now, looking at creating Terraform providers for different products. You know, I've done the JavaScript React stack a couple of times for front-end applications, but I hate front-end. I try to avoid it. Databases, big SQL Server fan. That's my favorite database to use, but also have experience with NoSQL and MongoDB. Those are the things that I explicitly say are my skill set, because everything else is a learn-as-I-go skill set, if that makes sense.
And you interacting with this, different customers who are the owners of different businesses. What scale up do you work with, and from which scale to which scale you have worked with?
Like size of company and?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, I mean, everything from, I mean, not just at Cisco, right? Because Cisco's not usually working with, like, you know, the tiniest of startups. But, you know, with Cisco, I've worked with, you know, like Fortune 10 customers, so huge companies. And then in startup world, it's the exact opposite, right? I mean, sometimes you're helping a one-man or one-woman operation. So, and that comes with a variety of communication techniques too, right? Those people view their problems and solutions very differently, have very different budgets.
How much time do you take in order to understand their architecture and bring that information to your developers, being a mediator?
Well, it depends. I mean, so at Cisco, right, that is, I think, the primary requirement is understanding the architecture, but it depends on, you know, who I'm working for and what I'm trying to do, what problem I'm trying to solve. As a developer advocate, you know, sometimes I'm just working on a simple automation problem, and, you know, knowing the architecture is not really necessary. But for most things at Cisco, it is, and I think that that's a lot of the upfront work that you take with a customer is fully understanding what they're doing. You know, I talked about how I'm making a diagram as code video, but not everybody maintains or keeps great diagrams. And so I've learned early on to ask good questions because you can get burned. You can get burned by, you know, oh, you know, we forgot we have a load balancer there, or I don't know. It just, so I've been in it long enough that, you know, you ask initially for their architecture and then you ask a lot of questions around it. You want to have as good of understanding conceptually of their network or architecture as they have.
What do you like most about your job?
I actually think I like the community aspect the most because it comes naturally to me. Like, I like being a friendly person and working collaboratively. And I mean, I might just be projecting my own experiences, but I think tech is not as friendly as it could be and collaborative and inclusive. And so, you know, part of how I encourage that is just being down to earth or even silly and stuff online, you know, kind of bringing back that childlike nature of like, hey, it's fun to build things and to learn how things work. And it's not that serious when you make a mistake. And hey, the person next to you can help you go farther. They're not your competitor. That's just a message I really believe in that the world needs to hear. So I get to do some of that.
I can also see you're creating content on TikTok and everywhere in different platforms. So what is that? What do you do?
I experiment. Because I didn't really mean to get into social media when I first started here. I actually don't really love social media for different reasons, but it's how I reach people right now. It's undeniable you can reach more people that way. You know, for my own business and for other startups, I'd been experimenting for a while on platforms like Instagram, but, you know, you don't know what you're doing at first. You just kind of make crap and, you know, you hate how you look and how your voice sounds and, you know, people don't really watch at first. But, you know, before I came back to Cisco, I had been experimenting low key with this stuff for about 2 years. And so I have gained some skills in terms of, you know, entertaining people, editing videos, whatever. And, you know, it's like, well, I work at Cisco now, so maybe people will, you know, care a little more about what I'm saying. And so that's all I'm doing across all the platforms is, essentially listening to and stalking people like I have built my career on, right? Understanding people and then just feeding them the message I think they want to hear the message that I want them to hear in the format that they want. So. TikTok, I'm sharing overall the same kinds of messages that I'm sharing on LinkedIn, but, you know, might be a little more laid back and funny than on LinkedIn. But I'm across LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. Want to move to YouTube eventually, but it's a lot of work.
And what do you have learned after coming into Cisco?
Like, since coming back?
Being in Cisco, what changes that happened in you?
What changes happened in me since I came back to Cisco?
Being in Cisco.
Oh, just being in Cisco, period. Well, I mean, Cisco's been, you know, 50% of my tech career, so that's really hard to even sum up, I think, in one answer. You know, like when I started at Cisco, I mean, I started out being, you know, in the lab recreating customer networks to troubleshoot issues, right? So I was, you know, on the ground plugging things in. And I think that first experience with Cisco really just gave me confidence and an opportunity. That changed my entire life, right? If I'd had a bad experience, I mean, I could have just quit tech altogether, or maybe I would have never learned network engineering. You know, you look back and you kind of forget how far you've come. But I very vividly remember being in the lab one day and being asked to re-rack a device. And, you know, all the devices in the lab are screwed into the racks, right? And so we needed to use a power drill. I didn't know how to use a power drill. And so I remember I spent like all afternoon trying to figure out how to use this power drill because I didn't want to ask anybody. I didn't want to be that person or, you know, represent women badly. But, you know, so I had to go through a lot of those experiences to gain some confidence. And more recently, I guess, more recently, it's access to, cutting edge technology. So the what I didn't like about being at these startups is that you're usually working with like one product. And I mean, it does not matter how complicated that product is. If you're someone who likes to learn and you're really smart, it just gets boring pretty quickly. So I'm never bored at Cisco. I can continue to make new things, reinvent myself. I have the Cisco name and resources to pay for education. It's invaluable.
And starting from network engineering that you have studied parallelly with your biology degree that you have, so today you're working directly with the products and services and introducing that to different businesses and helping them to solve their problems. So is there any difference in educating yourself now, seeing directly the products and how it is contributing, this technology products and services that you're working for, how that is impacting humanity or different businesses that you're working for? Any difference in learning and implementation?
Yes, because, you know, in the beginning of my career, and you know, even at first when I was working with customers because I didn't know better, you are basically just learning theory and from the textbook. And also even when you configure router on a stick and stuff, right? I mean, you're not doing things that are to directly address a problem, right? You're just trying to feel like you have some foundation of skill and continue to build on that. I mean, nowadays when I learn, I almost never just learn something for the sake of learning it. And, you know, that's why I'm not bored, right? So, I mean, I'm constantly being pulled into something where, you know, oh, so-and-so needs help with this. But, you know, maybe some aspect of it is a vendor I've never worked with before or a technology I've never used before. And you just kind of crash course, drink water from the fire hose, learn that way, but through the lens of the customer's eyes, right? And I honestly think it's a better way to learn. You know, having to learn to solve a problem because, again, kind of going back to the why would we make things that don't solve a problem? Why would we learn things that have no practical application or that we don't know how to apply? So I think the only difference in the learning process is I'm keeping the person in mind and making sure I learn everything I need to solve their problem, not to pass an exam or whatever.
How you improved how you have this problem solving ability, where it came from? It can be when you're communicating with people or talking with computers.
Where did it come from? Well, I think there is a difference between problem solving ability and problem solving skills. And I don't know, maybe this is arrogant, but I think the ability and the desire to solve problems is just something I've always had. My dad has that too, right? My dad, the software engineer. I don't know if I can speak to ability, but the skills, right? Skills are very different. I think you can have the ability to solve problems and still not be able to solve them. And a great example I can think of for this is that, you know, a lot of times in school, everything is, you know, A, B, C, memorize the definition of this, right? And as a, you know, perfectionist A student in school, right, I never had to really solve a real problem. You spend most of your school career just regurgitating things and parroting things. But problem solving involves things like frustration tolerance, like solving a problem that has never been solved before or that you don't personally know how to solve is frustrating. And so that was one of the biggest hurdles I faced when I first went into tech was, yeah, I'm smart enough to solve the problem, but I can't not lose my damn patience. You know, I'd be ready to hit my laptop. And so frustration tolerance is a skill that's needed. patience. I think that understanding the methodology for the space that you're in, right? I mean, in network engineering and troubleshooting, it's usually the OSI model is one example. But yeah, ability, I can't speak as much to that one.
So in the jobs and in the work that you are doing and that you have done, there are two persons in you, a logical thinker and a person who is emotional. So how do you balance both things?
I don't think there's such a thing as balancing per se or partitioning off. I think different types of people think and handle things differently, so I don't want to speak for everyone. But for me, it's been more about learning how to use my emotions to my benefit. I think they're intertwined, right? So if you take the example of being frustrated while solving a problem, right? I mean, before I had the ability to use my emotions to my benefit, I would just maybe give up or lash out at somebody. But, you know, now I'm able to think on that. Hey, I'm feeling frustrated. What is it that I need? Like, what is missing here, right? And then you're able to solve the problem. You know, maybe you don't have appropriate training and you need to go study something before you come back to this problem. Or maybe, you know, you really should have access to this one resource, but your manager hasn't given it to you and you really need to push on them to get it. Or you just might need to eat, right? So even working interpersonally with people, right, I think that professionally we like to pretend like we have no emotions and the people who are the most professional are just these shining rays of light who are always positive. But I think that truly, to do well in your professional career, you recognize your emotions and, again, you realize what to do with them. You don't take them out on people. You don't ghost everybody or give up or not fulfill a deadline. You say, hey, what is the message coming from this and how is this going to benefit what I do technically?
And as an observer, what do you say about technology evolution?
Oh, just all technology evolution? That's a huge question. I mean, I think that two things come to mind for that, and I don't know if they're what you're expecting, but I mean, one of the big technological evolutions that are happening right now are, you know, generative AI, right? And I'll say that I think it's exciting, right? As a technologist, any major technological innovation is exciting. And I think that it has great potential. One thing I'm noticing is that I don't think that people truly understand the technology yet. There's a lot of confusion around generative AI because people are, you know, rushing to share knowledge or be an expert or speaker on it without truly understanding the technology. And, I think that it might be a while before we get that quality education on it because it involves sets of skills that many people do not have in terms of understanding like deep learning and neural networks. And, you know, I mean, as a software engineer, I'm poised to learn those things, but I didn't learn them. So that's pretty exciting and scary. And I think the other thing that comes to mind is I grew up in a rural part of the country. And so something that's been on my mind a lot lately is how much different my life is compared to people at home, my grandma, for instance, but also younger people who like either don't know that these careers exist or have never used this technology or their life could just be easier or better. And I think that that is a growing disparity. Even if you have internet access, right, there's just a huge disparity in opportunities and education and attitude around it. So I really hope that people will look into educating and providing resources to those areas because it's really only going to benefit us as companies and as countries for everyone to be educated on, you know, emerging career fields.
And do you have a message to the technology leaders for working on different technology products and services, for listening to this from anywhere on this planet?
Just leaders who are leading any product or technology?
Yeah, yeah.
There's so many things I could share, but I guess the summary of kind of what we've been talking about has been the people aspect of this, and that means that means many things. It means value the collaboration of your engineering staff and stakeholders just as much as, you know, rewarding superstars. I would say, listen to your customers. Don't just, you know, for instance, Gen AI, don't just get wrapped up in it because it's the latest thing. You know, create something valuable that people need, even if it's simple. And maybe promoting emotional intelligence within yourself as a leader and amongst your team. I think that the teams that go farthest, who sustain themselves over time, are the ones who have that emotional intelligence and collaborative ability.
And to the upcoming network engineers, do you have a message to them?
For network engineers? Ugh. So, well, I'd say first, you know, a thank you. You're doing a job that's really difficult and that's often thankless. I would say don't be afraid of new technology coming out. One of the things that I have to do a lot as a developer advocate is encourage people to want to learn to code, for instance. You know, I think there are some network engineers who feel like, oh, you know, nobody appreciates network engineering. They're trying to push me into all this other stuff. And I would say embrace tools, embrace new skills. As a network engineer, network engineering skills are needed. They're going to continue to be needed. But don't get stuck in old ways. That's what I would say.
And, do you have a blog where you share your information or you share something that people can learn on the internet?
So I am on most platforms and blogging. I'm on Medium and Dev2 as Erica_the_dev. Again, because I've just started, the content has really just started, but there's a ton of ideas in the bank and a lot coming out. So I'd love to share it with people, and I also try to make content that people have legitimately asked me for. So I try to serve people.
At last, as an expert, as a people's person, as an engineer, what is your observation about my work? Have you seen any videos of mine on YouTube?
Well, honestly, when I was approached by you, right? I mean, I didn't know who you were initially. And, you know, you mentioned having me on the podcast, right? The main impression I took away, well, first of all, I was like, wow, this guy is really accomplished, you know, very down to earth, but very accomplished. And second, the main thing I took away was that you asked really good questions. And, you know, I saw that in a couple of your previous episodes, but also in things like your LinkedIn recommendations. Like, that's the one thing that stood out was your ability to get the best information out of people and to ask questions that they haven't been asked before.
Thank you very much. Your words are very valuable for me because you worked on different products and you interact with different business leaders. Your observation means a lot to me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, this is my first podcast appearance ever, so I was honored to be asked.
That's good. And I have done masters in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right now, I'm working for a UK company as a cloud DevOps engineer. So that's my full-time job. So apart from that, I'm interacting with experts like you who are from different parts of the world, who are into different technology companies, not just technology, also people who are police officers, doctors, engineers, lawyers, and authors, psychologists, like trying to connect with different kind of people who came from different backgrounds, who are from different age groups, from different countries, more than 100 countries experts I have interviewed, including the vice president of Amazon Web Services and Salesforce vice president, and also a lot of experts from Microsoft, Google, Netflix.
I
So
saw, yeah.
Trying to, yeah. So trying to understand how they are solving problems in their professions and with the experiences that they have. So as a people's person, what is your observation? What I'm going to learn from this collection of interactions and communicating with completely different kinds of mindsets?
Oh, man. I mean, I can't predict what you'll learn, but I predict that you will be light years ahead of other people in your profession and at your seniority level. Because it's not possible for us to personally experience everything, right? Or to know every possible way that a technology could be used or understand every industry, right? And so you having the ability to talk to all these different people, it gives you a big picture that a lot of people only have one piece of. And I know that sounds really vague, but that is the main reason I personally feel like I've been successful today, because I can go into any situation, because I've talked to so many people, I can go into any situation and I understand how that person wants to be talked to. I understand how to work best with people. I understand skills that are needed for different roles, industries. I mean, it's just power, right? It sounds cheesy, but the whole knowledge is power thing, right? It's kind of like you might be alluding to. It's not even just those DevOps cloud engineering skills. It's what do you understand about the world? You know, what do you understand about the people in it? What do you understand about this industry? So I think it's going to open many, many doors for you. That's the main thing I'd say.
Great observation. Thank you very much again for your valuable time and sharing your work and answering to some of my questions. Can you share your web links to me so that I can share with my audience and can able to put my website so that people can able to learn from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you one question in return too, because I'm going to be sharing this podcast with all of my network. Is there anything that you would like my network to know about, like, you and this work you're doing? I mean, it's a amalgamation of network engineers, DevOps, software engineers, leaders, sales.
Yeah, definitely. So when I've completed my master's, I was preparing for my PhD entrance exam. So I want to be a doctor. Like, I want to do a doctorate. So I want to do research on a subject. So computer networks was a subject which made me to get connected and spend a lot of time there. And this fascination, the project that I'm doing, this global project today, which made me to actually, that was the, you know, basic point, which made me to think that where computers are interconnected with each other and different protocols, the information sharing between computers. Like, I was thinking, why human created this kind of a system, like this network, computer network. So I was thinking more and more, you know, in detail. So I thought, like, why can't, maybe human wants, you know, a system with, where he can able to share information, you know, multiple system, multiple human beings. Maybe he wants different systems to, you know, share the information. So like that, I want to create a human network, and that I created.
I love
so
that.
That is. Computer network was the reason for this human network. So went naturally, like went into the natural subject of, you know, the psychological thing, you know, the technology to psychology. Because if you understand more psychology, the human psychology, you can be a great technologist. That's
yep.
What I see. So
I love that. I'm going to start using that term, like my human network. I understand my computer network, and now I'm going to build my human network. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing I want to share. Because you are the network engineer, you work more, you know, into systems, and you are, you know, certified, and you know a lot more things, you know, in detail about how technology things work. So that I just wanted to share that information. See, recently I have given a guest lecture in Northern Arizona University. They have invited me. So the same I said, like, what is your motivation to create this podcast and interact with so different people? So I said this was the plot line for me to create this content. So they were shocked, like all the new students like who are studying in the university, like they said, like they clapped, like said, it's great work you're doing.
Yeah, it's actually kind of unique, I think.
Maybe, yeah, when this is something which is making me to do it every day. And this is one of the most valuable interviews that I had.
Wow, thank you. That's what a compliment. I appreciate it. Gives me the confidence
So,
to do more of them.
definitely. So, can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go for it.
And also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Use it however you want and need to. I'm happy with all of that. And if I can share it, just let me know.
Thank you, Arikant, again for your time and for your presence on my show.
Yeah, thank you. Keep doing your good work. All
Take care.
right, bye.